Senator Daley. Welcome to the Senate Jobs and Economic Growth Committee. Today we are all about the budget. Probably say that for the next 85 days, too. But we have kind of two pieces to today's meeting, members. First, we're going to hear from the Housing Finance Agency and talk about their budget presentation, and then we will shift at roughly the halfway mark, 11:15, to then talk with Mr. Phillips and the folks from DEED. So with that, I have no other housekeeping announcements, so I'm just going to turn it over to Of course, now I've been reminded. members, you have something large and blue in front of you. This is our budget Bible for the next 85 days, and actually probably not that long because we should be finished with our work in less than a month. But it's tabbed per the state agency that we're looking at. Again, today we'll be looking at housing finance and DEED. And now I will turn it over to Mary, Commissioner Mary Tingerthal. Welcome to the committee. You might want to give just a brief little introduction of yourself because you haven't been able to join us to date, and then give you the discretion to go through your presentation as you see fit. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. It's great to be here. And I understand that we're your first budget presentation, so I hope you won't be too tough on me. My name is Mary Tingerthal. I'll give you a little bit of background. I started my career at the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, was there from the mid-70s to the mid-80s, and then left to really expand my knowledge in the private sector of housing finance, and have spent the rest of my career there until coming back to the agency just a month ago. With me is Tanya Orr, our assistant commissioner and policy director for the agency. And since I still haven't completely absorbed the entire agency, I'll ask for Tanya's help from time to time.
And Ms. Tingerthal, thank you. I just want to make sure members understand. So besides the blue budget book, we also have, you should have in your packets, the actual PowerPoint presentation that Ms. Tingerthal and Ms. Orr will be going through. So I'm going to assume, actually, that we should stick with the PowerPoint materials until you refer us to something different. So thank you, and please continue.
Yes, and you'll find throughout the PowerPoint that we have referenced the particular pages in the budget. So if you do want to go back and take a look at the budget materials, they should be easy for you to find. First, we have just a statement of what our mission is. The Minnesota Housing Finance Agency is 40 years old this year, and what we do is finance and advance affordable housing for low and moderate income Minnesotans with the goal of enhancing quality of life but also fostering strong communities. It's supported on several strategic priorities. And what we've tried to do here is reference those priorities, and underneath those priorities are the particular sections of the budget that address those priorities from a funding standpoint. The first is preserving existing affordable housing. That means take care of what we have and to keep the resources coming to support it, particularly from the federal government. To finance new affordable housing opportunities, largely making use of new resources and bringing in new homeowners. Prevent and end homelessness. We will go into a lot more detail on that. And then in more recent years, as we've unfortunately faced the foreclosure crisis, we've had a strong priority of mitigating the foreclosure impact through both prevention and remediation. The presentation this morning has four sections. We're going to talk a little bit about some of our highlights, our results from last year, the housing assistance distribution, how the resources have been used around the state, the budget program areas, which is where we'll spend the bulk of our time, and then a recap of the budget that the governor is proposing for this year. With regard to the program highlights, because many people are not terribly familiar with the Housing Finance Agency. I think people are sometimes surprised at how many Minnesotans we do touch. 72,000 households received some form of assistance through the Housing Finance Agency last year, with total resources of a little over $700 million. That resulted in about touching about 46,000 rental units and about 26,000 homebuyers or homeowners. Of that, 12,000 were new affordable units. That doesn't necessarily mean new construction, but new units that are newly affordable. We preserve more than 4,500 units, and that's existing affordable housing that we've managed to keep in the stock. Addressed homelessness issues for about 12,000 households, and addressed foreclosure issues primarily through counseling, not directly, but through counseling organizations for 13,000 households. This is a picture of what we call our affordable housing plan, which is the plan that we develop each biennium. This is the 2010-2011 plan that we're just coming to the end of. And in that plan, what I'd like to call your attention to is really the small but crucial role that state appropriations play in our overall budget. The Housing Finance Agency was really founded those 40 years ago to take advantage of one primary tool of the federal government, and that is the ability to issue tax-exempt bonds. Those tax-exempt bonds are allocated by formula by the federal government, so the amount of taxes foregone because of those bonds being issued is very carefully calculated and is allocated to the state on a per-person basis, and each state receives its allocation every year of tax-exempt bonding authority. We use that both to finance single-family mortgages and also to finance mortgages for multifamily properties as well. You'll also see that we do a fair amount of recycling of agency resources that come back from repayments of various resources used in the past.
Ms. Tingerthal, just on that, agency resources, do you want to help me understand that that phrase? Is that when I first looked at it, I was thinking it was maybe fee generated, but the way you just described it, it sounds like it's something a little different. So what can you help me understand that bucket a little more?
Certainly. And there are really two sources that are generated by agency resources. One are fees, and the other is interest earnings, the difference in spread between what we're able to issue bonds at and what we lend at. And as the programs over the years have generated resources, we have put many of those resources into agency reserves, which are required by the rating agencies to retain the agency's excellent credit rating. But as we are able, based on various fiduciary formulas, to release funds, we have used those to lend in connection with the other resources that are used by the agency. So, for example, we might do a allocation of federal housing tax credits to construct affordable rental housing. We might provide a companion loan for that from agency resources to make up the gap in financing.
Thank you.
A couple of points that you may not know about the agency is that we really are a supporter of business. Virtually all of our programs are delivered by businesses throughout the state of Minnesota. And by businesses, I mean banks, I mean mortgage lenders, and I mean housing developers and owners. The agency itself does not originate loans to home buyers and does not own or manage any apartment buildings. We are facilitating the work of the private sector. And the three main ways that resources get out to the public are loans that are originated to individuals by private lenders, and that's the bulk of what most people see. That's our most visible program. We take applications for certain programs from developers on an ongoing basis. And then for some of the most prized resources, such as the low-income housing credits for rental housing, we do competitive requests for proposal, and we'll be releasing one of those shortly for this year's resources. Just to talk about how assistance is distributed around the state, we provided you with a map of the share of eligible households, the share of assisted households, and the share of funds. The percentages are just a little bit different because amounts are a little more in certain parts of the state. And while we don't have a strict allocation plan, we are very careful in the way we design requests for proposals to ensure that agency resources are distributed equitably around the state, and have done that for the entire history of the agency. We're moving now into the section of the presentation that talks specifically about our categories of budget request. The first is the category that's known in the budget as development and redevelopment, and that includes the Economic Development and Housing Challenge Program. The request for the budget this year is $14.3 million. And we use this to provide financing for a variety of owner-occupied and rental housing. This particular resource has a very high leverage factor, leveraging about $7.30 worth of private investment for every $1 of state investment. It's used to produce housing for Minnesota households, generally in the range of about $35,000 to $60,000. And that budget is described on pages 9 to 13 of your budget books. The next program is one that really sets Minnesota apart in many respects, and that is our Homelessness Prevention and Supportive Housing Program. And that's comprised of three individual programs. Our largest program is the Housing Trust Fund at about $19.1 million. The Family Homelessness Prevention and Assistance Program at $14.9 million. And the Bridges Program at about $5.2 million. And we have developed, together with communities from around the state, a continuum of programs that range from prevention, that is keeping families out of shelters, and that's done largely through the Family Homelessness Prevention and Assistance Program, to actually providing financial assistance to developers and managers of housing that provides housing for those who have been long-term homeless and to keep them from becoming homeless again. And that resource is largely the Housing Trust Fund. I'd like to spend a little time here talking about some of the cost savings that are really captured by these programs. The Bridges program, for example, provides rental assistance to those that are suffering from mental illness. And it's been demonstrated quite clearly that it is far more cost-effective to provide rental assistance in conjunction with services, meaning a building where someone can live and have on-site access to services to deal with their mental illness, medications, et cetera, than it is to institutionalize those same individuals. And to give you a comparison, the cost of subsidies through the Bridges program is approximately $18 a day in rental assistance compared to $259 a day and up for a more institutionalized setting. So this clearly is combining resources from a variety of state and federal programs to really cost efficiently assist those suffering from mental illness. We have seen an increase in homelessness over the last several years as the economy has suffered, and we have had 40% of homeless adults report that it was a job loss that caused them to lose their housing. So the importance now, as we hopefully are coming out of that economic recession, is that we still do have a very long agenda in terms of homeless issues and a very long list of people who still need our assistance. And in preparing our budget cuts for this year, we've tried very hard to hold this program harmless in terms of any cuts and have proposed deeper cuts in other areas because we feel that this really does address the needs of those most vulnerable and has the double benefit of this cost avoidance in providing dollars in other social service areas by supporting this program.
Ms. Tingerthal?
Yes.
Now that we're getting into some more of the budget numbers, I wonder, could you maybe start at 20,000 feet? As you were directed to put together a budget, did you have a were you given a target? Does this represent a 5% cut to your general funds? I'm just trying to give committee members kind of a framework to put your budget proposal in, and then so kind of any overall directives that you were using to frame your budget proposal. And then secondly, you know, for instance, at the top of this PowerPoint, you have a number for the 12-13 budget for the Housing Trust Fund. Can you tell me how does that compare with the last budget? That's probably reflected in one of our budget pages, but and I also want to make sure that we're all working under the same definition of a cut. Okay, so is it a cut from an inflated baseline, or is it a cut from you got $10 last year and now you're recommending $9? That would be a cut of $1.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, the summary is set forth on page 16 of the PowerPoint presentation, and why don't we go there just to look at.
Thank you.
We'll give you an overview and then perhaps go back to the.
I think that'd be helpful, Mr.
The details.
Thank you.
Okay. And I'm probably going to ask for a little assistance from Tanya Orr, who was very instrumental in working both with the agency and the governor's office to prepare this recommendation. But if you would look at the first column, you'll see that the fiscal year 10-11 base budget was $82 million, and this is for the biennium, and that our proposed base budget for this year, which incorporates the 5% base reduction, is $77.1 million. So it is a true cut and definitely not from an inflated base. In fact, this reflects cuts in, I believe, two previous bienniums. Anything you want to add there, Tanya? Other questions on that to provide the context?
Well, that's helpful. And then maybe we can go back to that first page where you were starting to show some numbers. Thank you, Ms. Tingerthal.
So just to give you a few more numbers on some of the results of our homeless programs, for our family homeless prevention program, the median income of the families that program serves is about $9,400. The average assistance provided, and this is an amazing program because so few dollars do so much, is about $650 per family. And the estimated cost, and this gets them out of homelessness, this gets them out of a shelter. It does things like perhaps provide a down payment on an apartment so that they can move into a long-term apartment. That $650 compared to the fact that it costs $90 a day for a family to actually stay in a shelter, we think is quite cost-effective. I mentioned the statistics on the Bridges program, and then to talk about our program for producing long-term housing for those who have been formerly homeless, the average median household income for that group is a mere $8,300, and that's family households. That's not for single individuals. And think again about the fact that these are folks who have been in and out of emergency rooms, detox centers, prisons and jails, and homeless shelters. And what we have been able to demonstrate is that it's extremely effective in terms of keeping people out of homeless situations. In fact, our statistics show on the next slide that 87% of formerly long-term homeless were still in housing or had a positive exit at the end of 1 year. Income, as they got into stabilized housing, increased for 32% of the households that were entering the housing, and 72% of the adults that were assisted with this program reported some type of disability or mental illness being most prevalent. So we really are assisting people who are utilizing resources in other parts of the budget, in the system, and these really are addressing issues in a very cost-effective way.
I have Senator Kielash with a question.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just wondering if you have this broken down by vets, because I understand that a lot of the homeless folks are veterans, and they're one of the hardest to serve. If you have any numbers on that, I'd appreciate it.
Senator Kielash, Mr. Chair, we know that about 16% of the long-term homeless population are veterans, and the agency actually has served a number of veterans in veteran-specific sites, both in the Hennepin County Veterans Administration campus and in St. Cloud, and I think we have a project opening in Duluth soon, and we'll be happy to get you the specific numbers on veterans.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Tingerthal.
I'm also told that Minnesota has done two of the first developments in the country that literally are located on VA administration land. And we're really reaching across to the Veterans Administration to try to coordinate those resources.
But there was a follow-up question.
Moving on to our homeownership assistance fund. This is a relatively small but very important part of the budget. It's about $1.7 million. This provides down payment assistance for first-time home buyers. And what that means is that it really takes the resource that we have in being able to issue tax-exempt bonds, which are limited to being used by first-time home buyers, and really allows us to target to households that are really at the lower end of the income scale. Now, I want to emphasize there's been a lot of press, much of it warranted, that in the last 8 years we've stretched too far, made too many people homeowners. And what I would say about the Housing Finance Agency's homeownership program is that we have always insisted on the mortgages going to first-time home buyers being 30-year fixed-rate mortgages, and we're able to provide those because of the fact that we can issue tax-exempt bonds. We are insistent that home buyers receive home buyer assistance counseling prior to taking out one of our mortgages, and this down payment assistance is recaptured if the borrower leaves the house within too short a time. Again, this is a private sector program. It is solely originated by financial institutions and mortgage lenders. They do that within the context of their overall mortgage origination programs, and this simply allows them to extend their mortgage lending to a broader group of people. The median income of households that we serve is about $40,000, and that's at about 50% of the statewide median income. And because partly of this down payment assistance, the Homeownership Assistance Fund and down payment assistance, we are number one among housing finance agencies in serving the largest low-income population. So we do have a very strong track record of really focusing our resources to those who can use it the most. This is a particularly important resource outside of the metro area, where homeownership is often the most cost-effective choice. Where sometimes rental housing is more difficult to provide, and we feel very proud of the fact that this is available through our partners throughout the state. And just to give a sense of where the market is today, because I know if, unless we're all shopping for a mortgage, we wouldn't know, our rate today is at about 4.5%. The final section, or the next section, is our preservation section. This is where we focus on preserving existing affordable rental. This is a large portion, and also again one that brings a great deal of leverage. This also includes our rehabilitation loan program, which is largely used in Greater Minnesota. The so-called PARIF program, because it's got just way too long a name, preserves about $5.70 of federal assistance for every $1 that we bring to the table. And this is typically providing deferred loans for either an existing owner of affordable rental housing that's been around for a while that may need to have some capital improvements to it, and can sometimes affect the transfer of properties from an existing owner to a new owner that's able to make an additional investment into the properties. Right now, today, we have preserved almost 14,000 of these units throughout the state of Minnesota, retaining a resource that is far more cost-effective than it would be to build new rental housing. Okay. Moving on to our final category of resident and organizational support. The biggest category here really leverages, again, a lot of federal resources for particularly homeowner education, and also provides some capacity building for programs that work with local governments and local organizations to provide a continuum of care planning. And I'm going to ask Tanya to just talk a little more about this category.
Mr. Chair, the resident and organizational support, as the commissioner said, is used primarily to help organizations that then help low and moderate income Minnesotans with their housing. One of the good examples is we've spent less than $200,000 a biennium to support regional continuum of care planning organizations throughout the state who put together applications for assistance from the federal government. And the most recent award was $20 million, a little over $20 million came into the state to help with housing homeless and vulnerable adults. So for a $200,000 investment, we were able to leverage $20 million in federal assistance that they would not have been able to put together as successful applications if they hadn't had some assistance in that way. The homeownership counseling program, as the commissioner said, is a really critical component of our successful homeownership program. We have a network of counselors throughout the state that provide homeownership counseling to anyone, regardless of income. And it also is part of our foreclosure prevention counseling network, where we have over 70 counselors throughout the state who are helping people avoid foreclosure or make good financial decisions. We also use this money to support our nonprofit partners who develop and own affordable rental housing, and this helps them provide good management to their housing throughout the state.
So in summary, we have before you a proposal that of the programs that we just talked about that totals about $77.2 million. And as we discussed earlier, this represents this represents a 5% reduction from our base budget. There's also a change in the base budget that reallocates $2 million from the challenge program to the Housing Trust Fund, which is the fund that provides the rental assistance and homelessness prevention programs. And you'll see reflected in the right-hand column that, as we mentioned in the presentation, that the first three programs we have recommended be held at the prior level of budgeting, with cuts really being taken in the remaining programs. We do feel with the cut to the challenge program, which is the other large item, that we will still be able to leverage the full amount of federal low-income housing tax credit dollars that we use to develop rental housing, even at this reduced amount. So we've tried to be very careful in using those priorities to reduce the budget. I did want to remind members of the committee that housing always has been an engine for jobs, and I don't have to tell you that construction has been the hardest hit among industries. And 60% of all jobs lost since 2005 were in the construction sector, and residential construction employment is down 40%. So we believe that the housing that is supported by the financing produced by the Housing Finance Agency really will be an important part of the regrowth of jobs in the construction industry. And studies have shown that for every $1 million put into the system by the Housing Finance Agency, 15 full-time jobs are created, full-time equivalent jobs are created. In closing, we do think that the Housing Finance Agency is a smart investment. We know you'll be looking at many, many dollars and many programs, but we do bring a 40-year track record of success. No state appropriations are used for operating. All appropriations go directly into programs, that is, directly to Minnesota citizens. Investments are made in communities across the state, and they're made through the efforts of local businesses. So the economic benefit of really providing products for that hometown banker to offer to the people in their communities can really have an impact in many, many communities across the state. The investments, without question, leverage private and public resources. We talked about the cost avoidance through supportive housing and rehabilitation efforts, and we really believe that this small amount of state appropriations are vital to helping us target the other resources we have to serving low and moderate income Minnesotans. So with that, I'll wrap up.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner, you mentioned a couple times about educational topics or educational areas that you work with residents, you work with homeowners on. Could you share a little bit more of information of what is it that you're educating them about? How do we help them understand mortgages and home value and how to stay in their homes? What are the topics that you are covering?
Well, within the home buyer counseling program, there is a first-class curriculum that's been developed by a group called the Minnesota Homeownership Center, which is in part receives some of its funding from the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. It is unparalleled in the country. I can tell you that because my previous position, I worked with counseling organizations around the country, and it comprehensively walks homebuyers through what the responsibilities of home ownership will be, not just about how should they be careful about shopping for a mortgage, but also about budgeting, about what it takes to maintain a home, what they may need in terms of reserves in case something breaks, and really is geared to make them good, solid homeowners. And I think it's reflected in the fact that the foreclosure rate for Minnesota housing mortgages sits at about 1%, where for comparable mortgages, sits at about 3%, according to the MBA statistics.
All right. Thank you. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Chair Lilly. I have a question for you. I'm wondering if you could go back to slide 13 on the preservation portion
yes.
of the budget. I'm wondering if you could give a little more information about the PARIF, the Affordable Rental Investment Fund. I think there's who does – that do those funds usually go then to the landlords, encouraging them to fix up the assets? I'm just trying to understand that. And then also I'm wondering the rent for those particular rental units, are those at market rate? That's what I need to understand, the balance there.
Certainly. The dollars will go to the owners of the properties, but they go into capital improvements for the property. So, the Housing Finance Agency has been around for 40 years, and so has some of the housing. And so there is often a need for additional investment into the properties. Oftentimes, much of that will come from the resources of the owners, but sometimes there is a gap that it's useful to bring systems up to date, particularly things like energy systems, energy improvements, weatherization, new boilers, new lighting systems, etc., are often what's done along with a refinancing of a preservation project. In terms of the rents, these are typically federal Section 8 program rents, where the rents are set by formula under the federal government, and the tenant pays 30% of their income for rent. And the rents that are set are fair market rents. And those perhaps used to be a little bit skewed on the high side, but in recent years have been brought much more into line with actual market rents.
One follow-up, please, Mr. Chair. So the rent, the total rents that the landlords receive then are fair market value?
That's correct.
Established.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I have one more follow-up then.
Follow up.
I just need to understand then. So if the landlords are getting fair market value for their rents, then why is there a need to have the additional preservation piece of it? Because the other landlords who are charging fair market rents, they do not have the PARIF funds to update their facilities or their refrigerators or their energy things. And so I'm just curious, why is if there's a fair market rent, then why is this piece additionally necessary?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, the fair market rent is maybe perhaps a little bit of a misnomer, and this is just going to sound like really sort of geeky, but HUD does a survey and determines what rents are in a region, and then sets the what they call the fair market rent at 50%. Actually, I think it's 45% of that range. So they're not getting 100% of the fair market rent, of market rents. They're getting a percentage. They're setting it at below the median. So they're not getting the subsidy is the difference between what the tenant can pay for out of their income and the fair and what is the fair market rent. But it's not the rent that they necessarily would be able to achieve if they didn't have this contract with HUD to rent at these lower levels. So it's not a market rent. It's a percentage of market rent that gets subsidized.
Thank you. That is a missing piece of information I needed. Thank you.
All right. Very good. Senator Hall.
Madam Chair and members and Commissioner, if you look at in your blue book there on Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, page 5, I'm just looking at the agency overview here. I was just wondering if the Commissioner, Mr. Chair, could talk about on the last portion of that where it says expenditures by program under development and redevelopment, there's a significant increase in funds, and I'm wondering if that is part of some federal money, or that's a pretty significant jump there. And then I also see on that same segment the administration expense jumped significantly then, and I'm wondering if that was to handle that investment.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Senator Howe, you're right that the development and redevelopment is primarily due to federal funds. We received three categories of significant federal funds, the Neighborhood Stabilization Program money, which the first chunk of that was $38.8 million. We also received assistance through the federal tax credit program in two different ways, through the tax credit assistance program and the exchange program. And those are both development and redevelopment activities, so that explains the majority of the increase. We didn't actually add staff because of the federal money. The federal money flowed through existing. We accommodated it through existing programs and existing staff for the most part. We did have some slight increase in salaries. I believe the other increase, and I failed to bring my operating cost report, which we submitted a couple of weeks ago, but I think we did have some increases in IT expenses that explained some of the $2 million increase.
Follow up.
Yes,
Mr. Chair. Well, that's what I was wondering, because so that increase was just a static increase, because I see, you know, the funds in the development and redevelopment went down, you know, by over 80%, but yet the administrative costs, and when you're saying IT, is that wasn't just an investment in a system, that was some ongoing, because that's a pretty significant jump there in the administration cost.
Mr. Chair, Senator Howe, I think it would be better for me to get back to you about what we're projecting as the administrative costs for the next year. We did have some one-time costs, and I think some of the reason that we show an increase in costs in salaries is because we converted some contractors to employees, which is less expensive for the agency, and that's in the IT realm. But I will have to refer to the operating cost report, and I will get back to you on
that. Yes, thank you, and we would appreciate you getting back to the committee. And committee, we will share the information with you. Thank you, Commissioner, for joining us today and your presentation, and Assistant Commissioner, we appreciate everything that you shared. We'd like to move on now to the Commissioner of Department of Economic Development and Employment, Commissioner Phillips, please join us at the table. And while he's joining us, Senator Howe, I've been called a number of things in my short time here, but I haven't been called madam yet. So I was very impressed to have a new title as you talked about me today.
Mr. Chair, I apologize. You know, I do serve on the taxes committee. We have a madam chair there, and I serve on the energy and energy utility and telecom communications committee, and we have a madam chair there. So I apologize, but
it sounds like Mr. Chair that Tao has got to apologize quite a bit. Later. he gets that yakking going, and boy.
All right. committee members, we do have a PowerPoint in front of us. Commissioner, welcome back to the committee. We're happy to hear about the budget today. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Mark Phillips. I did an overview before, so I don't know if I have to give anything more about my background at this point, but I will proceed with our presentation. First slide, just to review briefly about our mission and goals. The mission of our agency is to support the economic prosperity of individuals, businesses, and communities by improving opportunities for growth. We do that several ways, by creating and retaining jobs, cultivating entrepreneurship, enhancing community vitality, strengthening the workforce, fostering self-sufficiency, and addressing economic change. I was asked to provide that 20,000-foot view that the chairman mentioned previously for the last agency. And this is a chart of our agency-wide budget, our funding sources. And as you can see, about 9% of our money comes from the general fund. A vast majority comes from federal funding. We have also Workforce Development Fund, which is essentially funded by an unemployment tax, and a small amount of other funding. General fund, to give you a flavor, I don't have a chart showing the last fiscal year, but I do have some numbers. The fiscal year 10-11 base was about $80 million. And although we proposed the similar 5% cuts that the previous agency experienced, we ended up at $78.3 million because we also have, as you'll see as our presentation goes on, we administer a lot of federal money. You can see almost $600 million. And some of those funds require matching funds. So as there's cost escalators in some of those federal programs, in order to maximize those federal dollars, we have to increase the state's portion of the match. Some of these programs are mandated and require a maintenance of efforts. So as we get into them, we can isolate the programs and if you have questions at that point. But that's kind of the 20,000-foot view. Okay, the agency budget, by the way, what we've proposed in here is the budget consistent with the cuts that we're proposing are in these numbers. So it's the governor's proposed budget at this point. Expenditures by program are starting from the upper left, unemployment insurance. This is the operations, not the payment of the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund. This is what it costs to manage the Unemployment Insurance Department, about $120 million. Going counterclockwise, business and community development. This is our job creation activities, about $116.2 million. Workforce development, by far our largest program, $549 million, about 67% of our budget. And again, there's a lot of federal money in there, and our general support services of about $35 million. We are divided into four operational groups, business and community development, workforce development, unemployment insurance, and general support services. So, again, I'm relatively new. I'm getting my arms around this budget, so I brought with some of my staff to go through this. So we'll do it by division. And this is Mark Loftus, who is our Division Director of Business and Community Development. He'll talk about that budget. I would mention, like the other slides, in the upper right-hand corner, we have the pages in your budget book marked that correspond with our slide and what we're talking about, so you can refer to your budget book. Mark?
Mr. Loftus, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Mark Loftus. I'm the Director of Business and Community Development Division at DEED. I know the time is short here today, so we'll try to move through this as quickly as we can. You'll see there, this is the overall divisional budget. We have a significant amount of federal dollars that we administer through our department, and as I get to those sections, I'll describe what those are. We, though, are heavily dependent on general fund dollars for our operations, as you will discover, and we are also a relatively small division, about 56 people in our division out of the entire amount of the number of the department. First of all, the business development section of our division has around 13 and a half positions and several funding sources. This is the office within state government that attempts to proactively work with companies who are making decisions to locate, to expand, to grow, to add jobs. And our staff here in this division, in this office, works with companies on a daily basis. We have people in St. Paul. We also have 6 regional offices around the state. And this fund also includes our assistance for the Biobusiness Alliance, which is a general fund appropriation that falls within our general account. Just to cite some examples, you see some metrics there of projects in the last year. Many of you are familiar with the project in Faribault, Sage Electrochromics, which is a high-tech glass manufacturer. We worked with them over a several-year period. We're all very proud of that success. But even more so, I might point to examples like the Cirrus Aviation in Duluth. You may have seen the news about Cirrus being purchased by a Chinese company. Those of us who've been around since the early 90s, as Commissioner Phillips has as well, they've worked with that company for almost 2 decades. From when they moved from Baraboo, Wisconsin, from a small shed at the airport there to their location in Duluth. And now they have hundreds of employees and potential for growth. So that's one we're very proud of. Also, I might note on that slide, you'll see the marketing of the state at events outside Minnesota. Just this past Thursday, a week ago today, here at the Rotunda, we had an announcement of a company called BioVest. BioVest is a company in Coon Rapids that is, if FDA approvals all come through, will be the first manufacturer of a vaccine for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Very exciting. And we first learned about that potential expansion when we were at a biotech show 2 years ago. And we're able to connect with them and help grow that business, and successfully they'll be expanding here in Minnesota. So an example of one of those marketing outcomes. The next section is the entrepreneurship and small business development. Basically, 3 functions within these funds. The first is the assistance for the 9 Small Business Development Center offices around the state. We have a combination of general fund and federal dollars to go into that, and I can break that down for you if you like. We also have general fund, we have direct assistance that we provide with these funds for entrepreneurs on a one-to-one basis. People who call us all day long who say, how do I start a business? Where do I get a manual to guide me? I'm going to incorporate. What do I have to do? And we also produce a variety of very, very good publications on a free basis for people. And this is also the office where we administer pass-through funds to other organizations who provide entrepreneurial services. Those would be groups like Women Venture here in the Twin Cities, MEDA, which is the Metropolitan Economic Development Association, the River Bend Center for Enterprise Facilitation in Southern Minnesota, and the Minnesota Inventors Congress. And those are all in our budget, and as later on I will describe the recommended cuts in those areas, as well as our operating cuts that we have to recommend. Next office is Jobs and Business Finance. There are a total of 9 positions in this office. And this is, as you can see, we have a significant amount of special revenue funds. And these are revolving loan fund programs. And there are about 5 or 6, about 6 different accounts. But principally, this is the Minnesota Investment Fund, long-term previous grants that we got that are now revolving as loans. And also in the Twin Cities area, the Urban Initiative Program. from earlier grants. We're still revolving those monies. But I want to make note here that we don't have any current general fund appropriations for the loan funds that we offer. These tend to be low-interest loans. In some cases, we provide forgivable loans if that's needed as an incentive. And also on this page is a federal number of $10,400,000. Minnesota is in line to receive a grant of $15 million from the Small Business Administration from a program they created last year. And we have until June to submit an application, which we will do. And we're taking a lot of input into what that should involve. But we can make direct loans with that. We can also make loan guarantees or venture capital assistance can be available through that. So that is yet to be determined, but that's a pretty large number in our budget, but that is a federal source that we'll be seeking. Next page is the Community Finance Office. Most of what I've described so far covers the business services area, business finance areas, but we also want to make the point that our division tries to support strong communities, too. Businesses can't grow if they don't have a strong community foundation in which to do that. So we do everything from cleanup of contaminated sites, redevelopment by tearing down dilapidated structures. We invest in infrastructure with grants into industrial parks. We provide low-income housing, rehabilitation, and some commercial rehabilitation in small towns. And that is primarily represented in that federal dollar of $65 million. That's a biennial number that includes our allocation of the Community Development Block Grant Program from the federal government, plus some carry-forward monies the federal government has from previous years that we are using. And you'll also note on that slide the Petroleum Tank Release Fund and the Remediation Fund. Those are two accounts that we use to make grants for contamination cleanup projects. And this year, we also need to reauthorize the Petro Fund to be dedicated for this purpose. That expires or it sunsets in 2012. We are looking at extending that to 2017. So there will be legislation to that.
And hang on a sec, Mr. Loftus.
Yes.
Mr. Jensen has a comment.
Sure.
Mr. Chairman and members, on Monday, the governor announced that he was going to add $5 million to the Minnesota Investment Fund. Is that something you could explain to the committee today? It's not in the budget right now.
Okay. Mr. Phillips?
Mr. Chairman, Dave, he's preparing a supplemental budget, I believe, and it's $3 million for the Minnesota Investment Fund, $2 million for our redevelopment fund, which we use in concert with our contaminant cleanup monies for redevelopment projects. So that's going to be coming, and it's been announced, but we haven't seen any paperwork. So this, what we're presenting, doesn't reflect that yet.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jensen, for noting that. Mr. Loftus.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to call up for a moment Katie Clark, who's the director of our trade office. There are two slides that deal with the trade office, and I'll let her.
Here, the way of the projector.
Here, much.
Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Clark, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. The Minnesota Trade Office general fund dollars at 3.1 basically covers personnel costs, computers and systems and supplies, and then special revenue covers trade missions and all the training programs that we do across the state. Any companies participating in those trade missions or our training programs are paying a fee to participate, so that's where that money comes from. The trade office in 2010 and the beginning of this year responded to almost 1,200 requests for export technical assistance from 587 companies. We conducted 104 site visits to 91 companies and provided export consulting, led 43 seminars, and educated 969 business leaders about exporting topics. And many of these companies are new to exporting, but many are also currently exporting but trying to break into a new market. So we provide country-specific trainings to help them do so. In 2010, Minnesota's total exports were close to $19 billion, and I should clarify that is manufactured goods and services. We're close to $19 billion. That's close to our record-breaking year, which was 2008. We organized a governor-led trade mission for 59 business leaders to China and Japan, A few success stories that came out of that trade mission. Jet Edge is a manufacturer of ultra-high pressure industrial water jet systems for precision cutting, coating removal and surface preparation. They were on the mission to China, and they've now established their own sales and service division in Shanghai and are operating there. And then we also got a note from Easy Energy that participated in the China mission. They are working on a contract, but as soon as this contract is finalized, it'll add another 400 jobs to their company. So we are excited to see some tangible results coming from those trade missions. And then we hosted 68 visiting foreign delegations and connected them with Minnesota companies. And 2 weeks ago, we just opened our first satellite office in partnership with St. Cloud State University, headquartered in St. Cloud. And the purpose of that office is to better serve small to mid-sized companies in greater Minnesota and ensure that they have access to all of our training programs as well. Thank you.
And thank you, Ms. Clark. And either for you or for Commissioner Phillips or anyone else, there have been suggestions, and I think fair to say that even Governor Dayton at one point suggested that maybe we don't need a trade office, that it's something that could be outsourced or put together in a different way. My assumption is that you've had some kind of internal discussions on that. Can you share kind of some of that, some of those discussions and your conclusion on that?
Mr. Chairman, I think the, and we could be happy to do a presentation more on the return on investment at some point. We didn't bring that information today, but I think that, you know, there was an isolated statement made at one time, but I think the return on investment numbers would show that the trade office does have a very good role to play here. And especially in the way our exports are growing, I think it's demonstrating their value. And I believe the governor believes in that, and he's been very encouraging. And again, the amount of the budget of this and the kind of exporting we're growing, I think it's just a phenomenal resource for our local businesses. So, Katie, do you have anything to add to that?
I would just add that the mission of the trade office is to focus on the creation and retention of jobs and doing that by increasing exports. We're also starting to explore how we can partner with Mark's team on foreign direct investment strategies. So I think it's a valuable asset to the state.
Senator Kielash had a question.
My question is, I'm not sure how many full-time people you have is one thing, but with all these different countries that we're adding to our export mix, developing or having people on staff to have the expertise in each of them, and especially on how to do business, it seems to me is pretty expensive. Just wondering if you're contracting out any of that or how that is managed.
Ms. Clark.
Mr. Chairman, members, we currently have 14 staff members. They are organized so that they're each responsible for a country or a region of the world. Many of the staff members have been with the trade office for 10, 20, one person has been there for 30 years. Many are bilingual, have a great wealth of experience. So we do our best to cover the markets. You're making a great point. It is difficult. It's a challenge. We also have access to different research groups with Indeed that support us as well. So we have structured the staff in a way that I think that they're prepared and do have the background on cultural topics and are servicing small to mid-sized Minnesota companies very well.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I just might add to that that we also interact with other cultural organizations such as, I'm using China as the example, we work with the China Center at the University of Minnesota.
Yes.
To provide additional support for when we're dealing with Chinese. So we do, it's not, I wouldn't call it outsourcing, but it's more of a cooperation, partnering kind of relationship.
Absolutely. Over the past week, I've been with the India Chamber of Commerce, the Norwegian American Chamber of Commerce. The list is very long.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So we can move on, and thank you, Ms. Clark. I just to to clarify on this then, Mr. Phillips, so, yeah, I mean, everyone at this table has a history of isolated statements, and so I'm going to assume that what's in the governor's budget is his latest statement on trade. I absolutely think it should be a priority, and you know, the more clear we can be, either with our numbers or our statements, the better. I assume you guys will take that back, and we will work with you. We will work with this governor.
Mr. Chairman, your assumption is absolutely correct. This is current statement, and he asked Katie and I to make sure we focus on putting the investment we have where the most jobs will be created. I think that's the marching orders we have from the governor. So,
thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Thank you. Mr. Loftus.
Yes.
The clock's ticking.
Yep. Mr. Chairman, I'll quickly move to my last two slides.
Thank you.
Which represent the program cuts. First is the operating cut of $376,000 for our division. That represents about 1.5 full-time equivalent positions and a significant amount of operating funds. That represents 2.4% of our overall general fund base. And then, as I said, we're asking for the extension of the Petro Fund, which is not a general fund appropriation. It also cuts in the recommended in the pass-through appropriations. These in total represent 2.7% of our overall general fund budget. In each case, I think these are about 25%, almost on the nose, recommended cuts. These are organizations who administer entrepreneurial services that we partner with all the time. They all do good work, and I will say here and say in future days, too, that these are all good organizations, all do worthy work. But we needed to cut 5%, and I would also say that the economic development budgets over the years have not been replenished with new funds, and all of these groups, along with our efforts, are working on job creation and business growth. But if we have to make cuts, we're trying to share it. At the same time, leaving these organizations with some funds to carry on their good work.
Yep, Mr. Loftus, so just to be clear, so we'll take an example here on this slide. I'm looking at page 14.
Right.
So you're saying that there's a $100,000 cut to the Women Venture program, and that represents a 25% cut from how they from the amount that they received in the last budget.
Mr. Chairman, their current biennial budget is a total of $400,000. So this is 100 off.
So they will now receive $300,000 according to the
yes
to this budget.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, we'd like to move then quickly to our workforce development budget, and I'm going to have Bonnie Elsie, the Division Director of Workforce Development, speak to this.
I'm sorry, could you give me your name again?
Yes. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I am Bonnie Elsie, and I am the Director of the Workforce Development Division at DEED.
Ms. Elsie, welcome to the committee.
I'm going to start with an overview of my division. We are the largest division in the department. And the majority of our funds, as you can see, 72% comes from the federal government. From the federal government, the majority of our funds comes from the Department of Labor, and then the Department of Education, and then there are some smaller funds from the Department of Human Services. Our general fund is mainly made up of, over half of it is match dollars to pull down federal money. And our workforce development fund is largely dedicated to dislocated workers, but there are a number of pass-throughs that the legislature has given money to, and that comes out of the Workforce Development Fund. The next page. Our office is made up of my division is made up of a number of offices. One of them is the Business Services Office. In that particular office, the general fund money that we have there all goes to the Job Skills Partnership Program, and I think a lot of you are familiar with that. That is a program in which we help educational institutions customize training for incumbent workers or new workers that are coming into a company. The federal money that's in this office is mandated on how we use it by the federal government. In fact, most of, actually all of the money that we receive from the federal government has specific mandates on what we do with that money. Money under the business service area comes from Wagner-Peiser, which is the job service, and that requires us to do a labor exchange system. So we have Minnesota Works, which is our job bank. We also fund WOTC, which is a tax credit program, and foreign labor certification is done through this office. I am not going to read all the verbiage on there. You can read that yourself. The next office we have is adult services. A number of funding streams there. The money that we get from the general fund is... Oh, I'm sorry. Should have been doing that. Thank you.
Good job, Mr. Loftus.
The money that we get from the general fund is all pass-through money and goes to Northern Connections, Twin City Rise, and LifeTrack Resources. And these are... agencies that the legislature has appropriated money to. The money from the federal government in this area is, again, under Wagner-Peiser, only the job seeker side, the Trade Adjustment Act, the WIA programs, which are delivered locally by our 16 workforce service area partners, our veterans programs, Career One Stop, and senior community services. And there is also an earmark in there for Twin Cities Rise from the federal government. The Workforce Development Fund under Adult Service is mainly dislocated workers. The rest of them are all appropriations, direct appropriations from the legislature to LifeTrack Resources, Opportunity Industrialized Centers, Twin Cities Rise, and Northern Connections. The special revenue money that we receive in our department is mainly from a fee that is placed on marriage license and divorce license, and it is to fund the displaced homemaker program. We also collect some fees in state services for the blind under the communication center when we do services for Braille and audio. Our next major office is the youth programs. We get $30 million in the biennium for youth programs, and there's two different programs there. Youth Build, which is a direct appropriation from the federal government for applicants who apply directly to the federal government. And then we operate the WIA Youth Programs through our partners in the 16 workforce service areas. The Workforce Development Fund in the youth area funds Minnesota Youth Program, which has been around for years. It also funds the Minneapolis Youth Program, the St. Paul Youth Program, and the Boys and Girls Club. Another office that we have is Vocational Rehabilitation. This office, of course, provides services to people with disabilities. And the general fund here is necessary in order to draw down the maximum amount that we are appropriated from the federal government. We can draw down $3.7 for every $1 of state match. So all of that general fund money is for match. Another office is State Services for the Blind. We have, again, the general fund to pull down the federal match, but along with that in the general fund, it actually funds the services for senior services. As we all know, that vision loss increases with age, and so we provide services to seniors and also for our communication center who does the Braille and audio services. Our federal grant award under State Services for the Blind is $21 million for the biennium, and then we also have the special revenue fund, again, the money that we get for doing Braille or audio services, and we do that for the K-12 system and have a contract with K-12 in order to produce that material. We also are given donations by people who would like to donate to especially our communication center, so that's what the gift fund is made up of. We receive extended employment money from both the general fund and the Workforce Development Fund. Extended employment is necessary for ongoing job supports for people with disabilities in order that they can work. And you can see there how many, over 6,100 Minnesotans worked 4.3 million hours and earned 28 million in wages. Independent living also receives money from the general fund and from the federal government. And you'll there see the number of people that were served with the independent living. Another program office that we have is disability determination. This office actually determines disabilities for people for Social Security. This is totally 100% federally funded, and all of their rules come from the federal government. We determine eligibility for Social Security on about 50,000 Minnesotans every year. Now we're going to talk about the change items to the budget. The Job Skills Partnership Program, again, is all general fund money, and we are recommending a cut of $442,000 for the biennium. This particular program gets hit hard because we need the general fund money in our division to pull down the federal match for vocational rehabilitation. We are also asking for an increase in general fund for vocational rehabilitation and state services for the blind as a result of the fact that we can actually receive more dollars from the federal government if we have that match money available.
Ms. Elsie, what does the 442 represent as a percentage?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, I believe it's about 10%. I can get you the exact number.
A ballpark's fine, thanks.
It's 5%.
5%, excuse me.
Wow, that wasn't even close to the ball.
Close.
That was an isolated statement, ballpark. Mr. Phillips.
That was an isolated statement, yeah. Absolutely.
Ms. Elsie, go ahead.
Okay. The pass-through grants that have been earmarked by the legislature, the general fund, we are recommending eliminating the funding that goes to Minnesota Diversified Industries. And then the rest of these have about a 10% cut. Twin Cities Rise, Advocating Change Together, Rise Inc., Northern Connections, and LifeTrack Resources.
Mr. Chairman?
And Ms. Elsie, I've got a question for Senator Thompson, but before my good friend from Hibbing, can you just give at least a thumbnail to the committee members of what each of these lines represent?
Minnesota Diversified Industries is a organization that is a manufacturing sheltered workshop type organization and hires people with disabilities. The reason that we are asking for that particular program to be eliminated is that it's not that the services aren't important. It is the fact that the mission of vocational rehabilitation is to place people in integrated employment and not segregated employment, which we consider sheltered workshop employment to be segregated versus integrated. If those words mean anything to you, what I really mean is that you're working along with the regular population and not just working alongside people with disabilities. So integrated means you're integrated into the regular workforce. Twin Cities Rise serves majority are men of color, and they're hard-to-place people who really need to develop occupational skills. Advocating Change Together is an organization that advocates for people with disabilities. Rise, Inc. serves deaf and hard of hearing. And Northern Connections is a call center that works mainly with TANF or MFIP participants and helps them and supports them while they're on the job and does counseling and career guidance, but it's all through a call center. And LifeTrack Resources works with hard-to-serve people and empowers children and families.
Senator Tomasoni?
And Mr. Chairman, just a general comment about the problem that you as the chairman and maybe this committee is going to have with making cuts in this division is that we're trying to create jobs and we're trying to increase jobs in the state of Minnesota. All of these numbers here represent people losing jobs. And so it's going to be, I know for sure that, for example, the Minnesota Diversified Industries cut is going to be very problematic for that particular company and the people they employ. And I think as you go through, we'll find that we have to make cuts, and we will make cuts. But at the same time, we're going to be laying people off and be taking jobs away from people as a result of some of these cuts, which is why it's such an ironic thing that we're trying to create jobs, but at the same time, we have to cut people out of their jobs. And it's just a general statement. It's not a criticism of anybody. I don't like the $350,000, just so you know, but I want to point out to the committee that that's one of the problems with the division that we are in as far as job creation is concerned and cutting budgets at the same time.
And thank you, Senator Tomasoni. And I know you have looked at many of these budget pages over the years, so yes. You speak from some experience. Ms. Elsie, do you want to continue?
Yes. Mr. Chair, I would really like you to go to page 31, because I think I need to talk to this, and then we'll go back to unemployment insurance. The legislative auditor's report that came out on our department talked about the fact that we weren't doing an adequate job of monitoring the pass-through grants that we receive and are responsible for that have been appropriated by the state legislature. However, we do not have any funds to monitor those. We don't have, like I said, the general funds that we have in our area are job skills partnership or match for the Rehab Services Administration. So the legislative auditors suggested that we take 5% off the top of the appropriations that are given to the pass-through so that we can do an adequate job of monitoring. I cannot use federal dollars to monitor state programs, and I think you saw that 72% of my budget is federal. So I just wanted to cover that in my presentation because most of that applies to my division. Okay, unemployment.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Phillips.
We have enough time. We can briefly go through unemployment. I think you've had an unemployment bill you've heard, so.
We have, but
we'll be very brief on unemployment.
I know you have some change items.
Yep.
You know, that's what we call cuts. Some people call change items. I just think we need to be clear with the language we're using here. Thank you, Mr. Phillips, and I think we've got a good 5 minutes on this, so.
Be very brief. Mr. Chairman, Keith Goodwin, Director of the Unemployment Insurance Program.
Thank you, Mr. Goodwin.
Members of the committee. If you're on page 26, we have four slides. We'll move very quickly. As you can see, our combined budget is about $120,498,000. It's virtually all federal money. There is no general fund money at all, zero. The special revenue is some a penalty money that we get dedicated to do some integrity checking from individuals who applicants who have committed fraud, and we make a fraud determination. Next page, which would be, there we go. Oops, I went too far. Where are we here? Yeah, I went past. There we go. You've had a presentation all this. We serve a lot of Minnesotans. We are proud of the challenging work we do in challenging times, and I'll just leave it at that. We think we're pretty efficient. Trust fund was $544 negative at the end of 2010. We project this year that the trust fund will exceed outlays, and that's good for us. It's happening sooner than we thought. To give you a flavor, a year ago, much like the budget numbers you saw Monday, I believe it was announced, or Tuesday maybe. We thought a year ago that we would be $707 million negative in the end of 2010. So, 544 from 707, as you can see, is about $160 million better. We think we'll be out of deficit by 2013. We are looking at those numbers again in light of trends that we're seeing, and I personally believe we'll do better than that. But we don't yet have refined numbers on that. If you go then to the next slide, I'm sure this is what you're referring to. For those who don't know, the contingent account is an account which is, again, it's not general fund money. It is money that comes from penalties assessed, in this case, primarily against employers who fail to pay their taxes on time. Therefore, there's interest assessed, and we collect interest. We don't do it just to make money on interest. We do it to incent people to comply with the law. We have 132,000 employers, and it's very important that the money flow in when it's designed to flow in for cash flow management and for the integrity of the fund.
So, Mr. Goodwin, how much is in the UI contingent account today?
Right now, in a snapshot? Well, I don't know that I can answer that off the top of my head. We are projecting that we will have, as you can see here, over the biennium, $12.9 million. And I can get it for you. Our receipts are constantly, the way it works, just so you know, there's certain money that goes to the Workforce Development Fund, and the rest of it is obtained and taken by the as for general funds.
So Mr. Goodwin, you're using it all.
The legislature is using most of it in general funds.
Whatever comes to this contingent account, which is, I'll use the word lumpy, it's over time.
Yeah.
But your two transfers here would assume that you're not leaving anything in the UI contingent account over the course of the budget.
That's correct.
Mr. Chairman, I think the concept here is it's somewhat predictable, but not totally predictable, so it's not something you budget for. So occasionally what we say, the money's there, so we transfer it to these other accounts.
Got it. Thank you. Mr. Goodwin.
So, and the proposal is $6.6 million, the Workforce Development Fund. We have some critical the UI by itself does not administer the workforce development side of the business, but I can speak on their behalf briefly. Critical needs and dislocated worker. We weren't able to fund dislocated worker training like we thought we would last year. In fact, I think, if I'm not mistaken, we ran out of some critical funds even midway through the year, and so this is viewed as being very critical. It is, we went from 80,000 individuals receiving unemployment in 2007 to a max of 240,000 in January of 2009. And today it's 167,000. So it's coming down. That's my presentation.
Members, thank you. That was a lot, and that was fast, but I think we've at least started the budget discussion. There is, hang on, Senator Kreifer, there's another meeting in this room that starts at noon, so our time is even more limited than usual. I want to make sure Mr. Phillips has a chance to at least conclude. It looks like you wanted to say something, Mr. Phillips.
I do. Mr. Chairman, I want to defend my isolated statement.
Careful.
I looked at the number.
Yeah.
I knew that it was $4 million a year, and I'm not used to thinking in bienniums yet. I'm new. So I looked at that number and said that's about 10% of the annual, but it's 5% of the biennium. So
go.
I apologize for that. Also, I just want to just throw out one concept when you're looking at these. The cuts we have to make are so tough because of this leveraging of federal money. So if you look at DEED in the whole,
yep,
keep whacking away at some of the greatest things DEED can do for job creation, because we have to keep increasing our leverage of the federal dollars. And because when we take care of disabled people in Minnesota, which is a very good thing that we do, there is cost escalation built into the federal money. So every biennium we're coming back for a little more state general fund match to maximize that federal money. So how do we get there? We take it out of the economic development side. We keep, when we have budget reductions,
yep,
or cuts. So, I mean, it's frustrating for us. I mean, those the things that Senator Tomsoni pointed out are not things we enjoy doing, but looking at those little programs. But also, we have this disabled population that we're taking care of, unemployed people, dislocated workers. So when the marriage of Department of Economic Security and DEED came, it wasn't necessarily great for the economic development side, frankly.
Well, and Mr. Phillips, we're going to see that dynamic on kind of having our hands tied at the state level because of the feds.
Yep.
We're going to see that all over this budget.
Yep.
And I would encourage you, I know the governor was out in D.C. last week, and all the governors are asking for more flexibility, particularly on the health care side. Let's not just keep that conversation on flexibility and state discretion to the healthcare side. I hope you guys can think of some creative ways to ask for more flexibility and discretion on the programs that we will be talking about at this table, the programs that you will be charged with running. I think that's a healthy conversation, something we can work on together.
Great.
Senator Kreif had a comment or question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. What I'd like to do is I'd like to get some detailed information, I think from the lady, I can't recall her name, about that the cut to the Minnesota Diversified Industries.
Elsie, is that right?
Okay. And could
She's
I get
nodding.
Some detailed information on those cuts? That looks like a very substantial cut, and I'm just interested to know in detail what that is.
Mr. Chairman, I can maybe answer. It's the elimination of that appropriation. It's not a serious cut. It's the elimination of that. Because we had a hard time qualifying their operation to the dollars that were with the federal money.
Yeah.
Vocational rehab is going away from sheltered workshop type environment and trying to place people in out into the business community working. So it's just not the model that's working for that.
Commissioner Phillips, let me ask specifically if I'm going to bang the gavel to adjourn here, but if you guys can connect with Senator Kreif even
Absolutely.
Right now, that would be useful and helpful. Committee's adjourned. Thank you.